Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
Welcome to the Class Racing Podcast, episode number 21. Welcome to 2020, Charlie.
2020 is here, AA.
Yeah, so we're done with our little winter and Christmas hiatus, and excited and ready to get back into the swing of things with our podcast. Last year we did 20 episodes, which I think is pretty good for a first year. What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I think so. Not too bad. We were shooting for what? One every 2 weeks. We fell a little short of our goal, but, in December, what did we do? One in December, that was it?
Yeah, I think so. So, well, we got a lot of good things planned for 2020. It seemed like a lot of you guys really liked the interview format that we did. A few of the big interviews, so we're gonna keep it going with me and Charlie, talking about kind of what's going on, but then also try to continue to bring on both some of the interviews to talk with us about kind of what's going on. But then also do some more in-depth interviews with, racers that have been successful in the past, current racers successful, champions. And we've got a really cool, exciting list of guys to bring on the show for 2020. So don't want to tease you too much on that, but put a pretty good list together. And then, we also have some other good ideas of some things. We're going to maybe shake up the show just a little bit and maybe talk about a few more controversial topics, which Charlie always likes controversy, right?
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
No problem. So tonight we'll just, kick it off, kind of talk about a few things that have happened in the past few weeks. I know that the internet chat rooms, Class Racer, Facebook, et cetera, has been, for the most part, I think, a little slow, a little bit, not a ton of things going on. But I think, usually this time of year, with the racing season, now only, when's Pomona, Charlie? A couple weeks?
Yeah, I think Pomona's probably 2.5-3 weeks out.
Yeah, and I think Orlando kicks off the season here on the East Coast in 2 weeks, so. Got a lot going on coming up, and we will have plenty of stuff to talk about kind of from here on out through the summer. So I was not been thinking about racing a ton over the Christmas holiday with family and things, but now that, kind of got that behind us and some of the races are starting to show up on the schedule, and I'm starting to think about it more and more. So always an exciting time of year.
Yeah, it's hard to believe we haven't raced in 2 months since Pomona almost. I mean, if Pomona was, the 5th of November, roughly, 5th, 6th, 7th of November, we're already here, the 12th of January, so we've been off 60 days. We're getting down to 2-3 weeks before everything kicks off, so it's coming up at a high rate of speed.
Yeah, so what have you been up to, Charlie? You got the cars all ready to go for 2020?
No, I got everything up. Nope, everything's still apart. Pulled down the white car, just kind of check out some things. There's a couple issues there we didn't think we were going to have, but they arose. So that's going to take some time to fix a couple of those. Red car, I'm not sure where my brother's at on a transmission. He's only had since October to put one in it, so I couldn't tell you where he's at on that project. Anything else, we didn't do anything. Corvette didn't do anything. The old station wagon. Camaro's in the shop under a rug where it's been since, I don't know, August. So.
What about the truck? Any updates to the truck?
No, truck's currently resting in its spot right where the Chinaman parked it 2 days after Indy. So we did charge a battery on it and put 40 pounds of air in the front and 20-something in the back, and it's just sitting on concrete waiting for his arrival. So he claims he's going to come and pull the motor out and freshen it up, but I've heard this a couple of times in my life, so I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, Paul, when you're listening, this is a call out from Charlie.
Hey, I'll break your balls, no problem.
Nice.
That's about it that's going on here, fixing some stuff. I stopped at in Illinois today, stopped down to T&E, picked up some stuff for my trailer and a couple other guys up there in Michigan. You know, some general maintenance on that. Those guys were swamped. I talked to Todd for a quick minute, and I think he said he was 6 months out on custom projects, and I think almost 4 months out on general maintenance for guys wanting to do, you know, brake jobs and re-grease axles and stuff. So the economy is definitely good. It looks like guys are preparing for 2020. So that's really about all that's going on in our camp right now, is enjoying some of this 40-degree weather here in Michigan the last 2 weeks, other than the 2.5 inches of rain on Saturday. But that beats 48 inches of snow, so I haven't had to use my shovel yet.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely been a very mild winter here in Ohio as well. I think we hit 67 on Saturday.
Man, good weather there.
I have also not got out the snowblower or snow shovel yet, which I cannot remember the last time in Northeast Ohio that mid-January, and had not broken that out yet. So hopefully it stays this way, but I have a feeling come February we could be buried with some snow.
It's pretty crazy. There's a group of guys I grew up with. We normally go on a ice fishing trip here normally this week or next week, and they called up to the place here, probably mid-Michigan, and they said there's like zero ice on a lot of these small lakes. So, you know, that's how crazy it is. Normally those lakes are froze over and people are driving trucks and snowmobiles on them by, you know, second or third of January, and they're saying they really got a light skim across it in a lot of spots.
Nice. Yeah, we've been spending a lot of time on our shop, kind of getting everything cleaned up and organized. And we also just replaced, we have 28-foot fluorescent lighting fixtures in the shop. And we finally bit the bullet and purchased the 8-foot LED replacement lights for them. And couldn't believe what the difference that made. I mean, it is lighting the shop up so much. If anybody's not done that or kind of looking into that, I mean, for the money, I think it was well worth it. The 8-foot LED bulbs, they're only about, I think they're just a little over $10 a piece now. I think money well spent. Just got them on Amazon, shipped direct to the house. But pretty cool difference, transformation on that.
Yeah, we did the same thing last fall. We had some just regular screw-in 100-watt, you know, old-style bulbs. And we just put in some LED 150s daylight. And it's probably at least twice as bright, maybe three times as bright what it was in there before. So, I mean, just, you know, those LEDs, it's amazing what they are compared to those conventional bulbs or those curlicue bulbs. Those things were terrible. We tried them for a couple of years, and they just suck. They don't put off any light. They don't take any juice, but they don't put off any light.
Right. Yeah, and we got done. My dad said, "Man, you made the garage look cleaner." And I said, I don't know about that, but it definitely looks better.
So
yeah, we've been working on that, and then we haven't really not started taking cars apart yet too much, but I don't have a ton to do to the two cars that I run. And my dad is looking to make a pretty big change. He's got the Grand Am for sale, and we have purchased another super stock roller that we're going to most likely move the driveline out of the Grand Am into. So kind of exciting change on his side.
Nice.
So, okay, well, Charlie and I made a list of 7 or 8 things here that just kind of want to touch on with the year getting started. So we'll jump right into that. But PRI, Charlie, what did you think this year? I know that you spent a couple days there.
Yeah, I spent a day and a half there. I didn't really see anything that was earth-shattering. Walked around to most of the guys, business as usual, at least the guys that I really cared about. I didn't spend a lot of time in the the circle track, you know, side of things, but, you know, went through and, you know, saw the transmission guys, the bell housing guys, the header guys, you know, the big three. I didn't think, well, I shouldn't say big three because I don't believe Mopar had a display in there. I know GM and Ford had one. I didn't see Mopar, but not a lot of new stuff, you know, stock, super stock wise. You know, it's basically the business as usual. I think ATI may have had a couple new part numbers or some new balancers for some guys that they've been working on. But I didn't see a whole lot of, you know, like, man, I got to have that, or, you know, that was neat. I didn't really see a whole lot this year. I don't know, how about you?
It seemed to be there was definitely a buzz about, I think, you know, within Stock Superstock, for sure, it seems like there's a lot more interest in the transmission converter this year. A lot more people talking about that. I know there's some guys kind of doing some new things there. There seems to be a lot of buzz about that.
You referring to like the fluid dump deal, or what are you referring to?
Yeah, seems like that's kind of the new buzz, and a lot of the definitely a few racers were talking about that, and just talking to, you know, some of the transmission guys, it seems like that's new.
It's not really something new. I mean, a lot of guys have known about that for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. It just kind of was more like if you lived east of Mississippi, you were told you couldn't do it. And on the west side of Mississippi, people seem not to care. So, once again, you got kind of the east-west coast rule book. I know there was a little deal on Class Racer the other day about some guys getting into it and this and that. And a couple guys on there said, you know, we were told we couldn't do this. And those guys were calling themselves innovators, the other ones. And people were calling each other cheaters and whatnot. So, yeah, that's been around for a while. I think there was a couple comp guys that came up with that, you know, a long time ago. I know there was some lockup converter stuff, and guys were getting real crazy with that there with little Alders with four cylinders. And
yeah, it seemed like that was a little bit of buzz you just kind of heard around the show. I know that, you know, I've got a good friend that runs Top Sportsman. And Marco Abruzzi makes a torque converter for the Top Sportsman cars. And it's a mechanical deal, but it actually overdrives in high gear. So the transmission is actually turning more RPM than the engine at the finish line. You know, just maybe 100 or 2 RPM. But, you know, knowing that if you look at a racetrack with a car like ours, or, you know, like my, you know, my 7-inch modified stuff, I mean, it slips, you know, 5-6% pretty easy at the finish line. So I know that technology has kind of come out in the last couple of years, kind of on the, you know, the bigger horsepower stuff, and has made a big difference. And I just feel like, you know, some of that's starting to bleed down. I think some of the fluid dump stuff, like you said, is you know, seems to be coming more to light. More people are kind of figuring out about that. But I would say also just the, you know, I think for the longest time, like in Stock Super Stock, it was, you know, you got to have a Pro Trans, got to have a Pro Trans, right? I think now there's a lot of different options. You know, I think the guy's got the 400 figured out. I think some of these lightweight 350s are right there. And I think, you know, I spent time, you know, with Cohen, with the guys at A1 and ATI. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that seems to be a lot more parts money being spent kind of in that realm than I'd kind of seen in previous years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to these, you know, some of these converters. I mean, what's a bolt together aluminum converter now? Are they $5,000-$6,000 more than that?
Yeah, that's about right. Depending on the option.
I mean, so the transmission has gone from, you know, a basic 3-speed, like a, you know, a generic, I shouldn't say generic, but, you know, your basic McLay that everybody had, you know, 20 years ago, 200-wise. And now you've got, you know, used to spend $2,000 to $5,000-$6,000 on a transmission in a stock or a super stock car. But now you got guys spending, you know, $12,000 to $15,000 on a trans converter combo, you know, depending on what it is. I mean, so it's made some big leaps here in the last 10 years.
Yeah, so I would say that was one thing that I kind of, you know, seem to hear more about than normal.
Yeah, I guess the other buzz was probably the John Gulius rule. No question. NHRA went ahead, said, no, you guys can't run that. Then everybody got their panties in a wad. Everybody's threatened to sue them, this and that. And they said, well, we're going to make a ruling on this. I mean, typical NHRA, they can't, make up their mind. I mean, this should have been really easy. All right, we're not going to let you guys do this. You got 12 months to figure something out. But I agree with the guys that, got blindsided by this originally in December. I mean, we were talking to a couple guys doing Superstock Cylinder Head. I mean, it's 12 to 18 months if you give them 50% down and start now. So these guys that they're saying, well, these heads are no good starting in 2020, they were screwed. I mean, they basically, try to put an engine together. If you're going to Pomona in 45 days, you can race. I mean, that's BS too. It should have been just like they did with all the Mopar guys running that DL340 intake. Hey, here's what's going to happen. We know this, that, and the other. Intakes, you got to get them matched and this and that. We'll give you, to the end of 19 to run that manifold or whatever it was, 18 or 19. Then after that, start of the next season, it's done. And that's the way it should have came out. But, of course, nobody can think ahead. So then everybody gets in a bunch. Then you got guys suing. Then you got, John Gulius supposedly closed up shop. I got a couple people that sent me some stuff. And so I called the recording there at the shop, and it said he's out of business due to HRA and their constant rule changes, which I thought was very funny. You had some guys in Division III that, were unaware of him closing the shop the way he did, supposedly. And those guys were kind of up a creek on some stuff. So they make a rule, and then basically 2 weeks later, they go back and rescind it. I mean, it's the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing.
Did they fully rescind it, or did they just postpone it? Because I heard both.
Yeah, well, rescind, postpone, you split the hair whatever you want. Right now, there is no ruling on it.
Okay, so they've not said it's coming out at the end of 2020.
Right.
They've just paused it for now.
Right, it's just like the standard question everybody asks, once a year. Can you run a 55-millimeter cam in a stock eliminator car? And the answer you'll get from, 8 out of 10 guys in the tech department is, well, we don't check that on stock eliminator car. Not that you can or you can't do it, just, well, we don't check that. That was always Danny's standard answer. We're not checking that. We couldn't tell you that you could
which
do it.
Really
or
doesn't,
do
which
it.
Really doesn't answer the question that you asked.
Correct. And it was just, that's just typical the way things have been the last 10 years, So, which that'll bring us to a whole nother point here at the end with the SR, the Sportsman Race Committee guys here. We'll bring that topic up here. But yeah, those were probably the two big things at PRI that I saw was the John Gulius rule. And, let's face it. I mean, you can like John Gulius, you can not like him. I personally think, all he's done for Superstock is make it way more expensive for everybody else over the past, 25 years that I've been running stock and Superstock.
I don't know John well. I mean, I have met the guy. I will say that some of the stuff that he has done is pretty innovative. He's definitely.
Well, I mean, you can use the word innovation pretty loosely. I mean, a lot of it's just flat, crooked, in my opinion. So,
but he's
all it's done is take a set of Superstock heads that were. $5,000-$6,000, and now they're, $14,000-$15,000. And then everybody's got the balls to bitch about the payout after spending, $14,000 for a set of heads. So.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll see. Well, it'll be interesting to see if they, come out with something in the next few months that changes that back.
My vote right now is I guarantee NHRA is not going to do anything for at least 6 months. They're not going to do anything. That's my vote. They won't say no, yes, maybe. I hope I'm wrong, but I've seen it too many times.
Well, and I think it sets a bad precedent if, if you change a rule and then enough people complain about it, they'll change it back.
This is really simple. When you've got a rule like this, it's really simple. Put it to a vote. You got guys, if you ran 2 points meets in 2019 get every super stock racer that raced at least two grading points. Send them a ballot, right? There's, you have to send out 500 ballots, right? Get these addresses, which you already have, mail them out. So it's going to cost NHRA, you know, less than $1,000 to do this. You know, get some mailer company, have them send out this postcard, you know, and either go on or have it online, which would be even easier. You know, hey, punch in your membership number, and it will either let you vote on it or it won't let you vote on it. Give people 10 days to vote on it. At the end of the 10 days, you know, these are our members. There was 300 people in favor of this rule and 200 against, or, you know, 300 against, you know, whatever it is. Let the people that run the class decide. I mean, how hard is that? Instead of not having a voice, I mean, leave stuff like that. You know, when you have, you know, a group of 500 plus more racers, you know, you're going to get a pretty honest answer from a lot of these guys. You know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and there has been some precedent on that. I know a few years ago they voted on whether or not they should change, like, the 90 indexes and things like that. But I don't think they actually changed anything. I would assume if they did do a vote on this head rule, anybody that didn't have the heads would vote against. Anybody that did have the heads, which was a minority, would vote for, you know.
But, okay, so in that case, let's go back to your – you know, NHRA has in their back pocket this Sportsman Racers Committee made up of seven stock super stock guys. It's got a stick shift guy in there. It's got a modified guy. It's got a guy that owns a car dealership, a guy that owns his own business, another guy that owns – you've got a very diverse group of people. Run it past this group of people and see what they say. But did they do that? No. Why would they do that? You've got seven guys – that are very respected in our community of racing. You know, I take all those guys on a committee. I mean, they're all very intelligent, have run the class, had success in the class. You have this in your back pocket. It doesn't cost you a dime. These guys do it for free. And what do? We don't consult them. We don't do anything. You know, it's amazing you can run this operation like that and have those kinds of tools in your back. I mean, like, if you had a business and you had a board, and that's what they did, and the guy on the production floor just called all the shots and never, you know, consulted the board about anything, it wouldn't work, which is basically what we've got going on here. As you can see by them, you know, basically changing their mind less than a week later because they didn't think it through and they didn't figure it out.
Let's put the old pause on this conversation just since we're going to come back to it here. But yep. I agree with you absolutely.
So,
all right. So just to kind of finish up on PRI, for those of you that, you know, have never been to PRI, it's definitely worth the trip. You know, I think there's, I don't know, 20,000-30,000 racers to get together. And I think it's become as much of a social event as it is a trade show for sure. But there's, you know, I think PRI did a pretty good job. There's, you know, there's happy hours, there's free food, there's, you know, all kind of different events. A lot of the vendors and companies did events outside the show, at local restaurants, et cetera. And, you know, definitely a good time to be had for all. I would say this year, I would say just back to our thoughts on the show, I would say one thing that I thought was a little bit different, it seemed like the last couple of years, like, if you were a street outlaw, like, it was all about the street outlaws. Like, if they were at the booth, there'd be line to be miles long. And while the street outlaws and those guys were definitely still there, I think it was definitely – I think they've lost some popularity. And I don't know if that's good or bad for the sport, but definitely less of that going on, you know, and more about just racing in general. So – all right, so moving on to our next topic. I think now we've got most of the division banquets were either, you know, I know Division 3 does it the same weekend as PRI, and it looks like most of the other division did theirs this past weekend. So saw lots of stuff on Facebook, pictures posted, et cetera. You know, that's pretty cool, and it's good to see some of these racers dressed up in their Sunday best every once in a while. So.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you and I have both been to some of those banquets. I've got, you know, mixed opinions on them, but for the most part, they're pretty good.
No, I mean, it's I don't care if you're winning the track championship at your local track or the division or national championship. None of those are easy. Everything's tough. You know, there's tough guys everywhere at every level. And, you know, it's good that we at least have a way to go and celebrate these wins. And I think some of the cooler pictures I saw, you know, I think Ryan Walter on the West Coast that won the six comp championship, you know?
Yeah.
In kind of the same car that his dad, I think, had won the championship back in the maybe 80s, early 90s. And, you know, he had like a nice post, I think it was on Facebook, you know, him and his dad in the trophy, and, you know, his dad had been D3 or V6 champ in the same car a long time ago. You know, I think some of that's really cool and a cool story. And I think some of that stuff definitely makes, you know, helps make the sport what it is, right?
Yeah, something like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, some of the divisions, it seems like, do a very good job making it kind of a fun weekend for sure.
I think Division Four probably does it the best from what I've talked to people. They do a real good job. They break it down. You know, they do an improved driver in each category, mechanic in each category. You know, they really separate out and really try to farm out a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of people that are deserving of stuff. Some of the other divisions only do, you know, one or two. But I was going through that list and yeah, I think Uncifer was the MC that night. And the list is just, you know, it's like a half page long, but they always, Emmons has always said what a great time that banquet is. And everybody really enjoys the Division IV one, from what I understand.
Yeah, for sure. So
I've gotten, I mean, not to be doom and gloom, I mean, I've gotten turned off on a couple of them banquets because, you know, the two times I've went, I think I can't remember who it was, if it was Super Comp or Super Gas, but somebody had like a 52-minute or 45-minute, you know, speech, and it was just like, everybody was just like, come on, man. I mean, most people get in and out of there in 5 or 10 minutes, but you get two or three guys that, you know, get long-winded, and it can really drag out, especially
yeah,
when you can't get cocktails in the middle of it.
Yeah, definitely. It was the D3 banquet. You know, I was fortunate enough to get to go a couple years in a row there. And it was at long at times. I mean, there was, a little 3 or 4 minute bell when your speech needs to be over would definitely be good. I think it's hard to tell a junior dragster racer that, you know, he can only read one of his 5 pages that he's prepared. But I'll never forget the 1 year, the funny car guy, and I don't even remember who it was, he got up and spoke for a long time. And finally, our Charlie and I's good friend, Todd Benny, actually stood up and told him to sit down. And everybody had a good laugh. And the guy had a few cocktails. And it was a good time. But the top alcohol guy, Dragster, got to go last, you know. And I think everybody was just like, oh, man, I just want to be out of here so bad by the end of it. And he got up and said, hey, thanks, and grabbed his trophy and walked off the stage. It was great. No speech at all, just foregoing it. So I don't know if that was planned or he just kind of felt that was what the audience wanted, but it was two of the best speeches right there in a row because the first guy just rambled and rambled. And he was hilarious, but it was about, you know, 20 minutes too long. So
yeah.
All right, so next, this has probably been the hottest topic so far of 2020 for sure, is that the Gator Nationals stock filled up within 24-ish hours at a grade 8. And Superstock was pretty quick right behind it.
Yeah, I think it took stock about 3 days to fill after it opened. I don't think it filled up on the first day, but I think it filled up like that Friday morning.
I thought it was like a day, day and a half, but I could be wrong.
It
but
was,
very quick.
It was before the weekend, I know, it filled up.
Yeah.
Which really shocked me because, you know, last year they took the same amount of cars, and it was the 50th Gator Nationals, and, you know, it filled up at a 7. So my thought process was, well, there were some people that wanted to go to the 50th, this, that, and the other. it'll probably take six or so to get in. And, you know, it took eight there, and then basically Superstock was 98% full at a grade eight also. I mean, there's two spots that I guess 10, 12 people were fighting for, you know, Wednesday morning when it opened up.
Well, I know that, you know, Supercomp and Supergas filled up as well. I believe at a grade seven, which pretty unprecedented there as well. So,
yeah.
The demand for the Gator Nationals this year is definitely high.
I think one of the big reasons that the demand is high is people have forgotten about how wet that place can be, and it's been about 4 or 5 years since that place has really been a disaster, which you and I have been. I've been there twice over the past 20 years where it was an absolute disaster. And normally it takes about 3 years after a disaster for people to want to go back there. You know, I remember one year we got in there Wednesday, parked. It rained Thursday a little bit, rained Friday, rained Saturday. We didn't even get a time trial until after the pros ran on Sunday. And then they ran the whole race from like 5 o'clock till midnight. All six categories, you know, I think they've been, you know, comp and alcohol have gotten to run in between as filler for the pros, but the other four or five, you know, stock, super comp, gas, you know, nobody got on the track till Sunday. So, I mean, that really rubbed a lot of people. You know, the place was a disaster, and I don't blame NHR for that because a lot of people were parked back in the back where it's wet and there's a lot of, you know, stone and dirt. So you can't have guys, you can't have, you know, 80 cars coming up to the pits, you know, tracking mud and everything and trying to run a pro race. I don't blame them on the decision, but it turns people off. And it's been relatively good weather there probably the last, I would say 4 or 5 years. The last 4 or 5 times I've gone, it's been pretty good. So that's another thing I think kind of driving up the entry deals. Guys have kind of forgotten about how wet that place can get. So, I don't know. I mean, it was wet the one, I guess, what year did it get real wet when I went with Kevin? I'm trying to think if that was 15 or 16. That was probably the wet. But that really wasn't too bad because everybody was pitted and it was only one day. You know,
yeah.
I remember guys, they went to, I know the Cook brothers and some other guys went to Lowe's and bought 3 or 4 sub pumps and were running them on generators down into the creek cleaning pit spots. But it really, we haven't really had a washout during the race, so to speak. Yeah, I guess the last one would have been that year because we didn't race that. We ran class, but we didn't get to run the race until Sunday, and they gave guys the option on Saturday morning to withdraw or stick around until Sunday and run the race. And I think about half of us, because guys had to work on Monday and stuff, we pulled out, you know, Saturday morning and we're home.
Yeah, you guys withdrew, right?
Yeah, we withdrew, you know, just because we looked at it and we said, okay, you know, if we were still in on Sunday, we'd have been down to 6 or 8 cars, which would have made the decision a little different. But, you know, they weren't even going to, they had already told us they weren't even going to start running eliminations till after the pros. So we figured, you know, second round would be at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock, which is about when it was. And by the time we drove back and, you know, we had stuff to do, you know, that Monday, I had scheduled some stuff late Monday. I know Kevin had scheduled some stuff, you know, late Monday. We just, it wasn't going to be feasible, you know, so.
Yeah.
Probably should have stayed, but we didn't.
Well, I think the economy has been good. It's been strong.
Correct.
Gas, diesel prices are still relatively low. And, you know, I think that shows that, you know, people want to go racing. People want to race, and it's race stock and super stock. I think it shows that the sport's strong. You know, I know there's a lot of guys frustrated, a lot of local guys frustrated about, you know, it filling up so quick about the relatively low, you know, amount of
I could see their frustration if they lived anywhere but Division II. But after you look at the National Open schedule, where you get an opportunity to get 10 grading points over 5 weekends, along with your points meet, I mean, if you live in Division II, you have an opportunity for 15 or 16 grading points. You know, no other division has it. I mean, Division III, I think we've got an opportunity for 9. Division 5, I think, has 10 or 11. Division 1 might have, I think they've got 7 and 5, so they have 12. I mean, Division 2, those guys have the most opportunity and the easiest opportunity because, I mean, look at all those National Opens are double grading points, except for the one where Rockingham, you get the points meet and then the Open after it. So it's not a double Open, but it's a double grading point deal. So, I mean, Rich has done a good job there in, you know, trying to give these guys, you know, he listened to them a couple years ago. They were really crying and bellyaching about how they couldn't get into places. And, you know, I think it was Michael Brand or somebody told me, listen, man, you know, if you got a two-car trailer and two cars, you can go to a National Open for $400. You can get 4 grading points. I think there's still $100 entry fees, you know, in one tow. So, you know, how you don't get 6 or 7 grading points in Division II and want a race is really, you know, kind of boggles my mind. So,
you know, I really like the National Open Series that they've gone down there. I think it's cool. I think it's I like the fact that they allowed for, you know, they allowed the crate motor guys from the ice ray and believe the old pure stock guys just, you know, another place to race. I think that's cool. I think it also allows, you know, some eighth mile tracks, like I think Mooresville has a race and stuff like that, that would not normally get to have a, you know, a divisional type race at their track. I think it's great for the sport. I think it's great for stock and super stock. And obviously it's great for the guys in D2. However, I do tend to agree that this does allow them to, you know, easily get a lot of grade points. And I think it's why this has filled up faster than almost any race, you know, that you see on the circuit. I don't think it will be a sign of, I guess, what happens the rest of 2020. I think it will take, you know, a fair amount of grade points to get in, probably almost everywhere. But I think, you know, 4 or 5 grade points you should be able to get in most races, I would think. But I don't know. It's a sign of the times. I can remember, you know, not that many years ago when if you had a grade point or two, you could race at almost any national event.
Yeah, and I mean, that was back under a way rougher economy, too. I mean, we're, you know, we got a presidential election coming up here, and let's say some stuff goes the other way. I mean, you know, 12 months from now, people could be, you know, not as comfortable as they are now.
Yeah, so while I agree with you that the, you know, D2 has all these extra National Opens and allows them to get more grade points easier with less tow, I guess it's not good for me and you necessarily, but I think it's good for the sport. So, and I don't, you know, I saw a lot of guys arguing on Class Racer, Facebook, et cetera, on, you know, how could you fix this? What's the better way to do it? And, you know, I read through a lot of the comments, and I think, you know, Chip Johnson had one that I thought was just about the best. He basically said that, I believe he said something like allow the top, you know, so many in points, you know, basically like a grade 10 or 8 plus or something that they, you know, allow the first chance to get in. I think he said top 50, was that? I don't know if you saw that, Charlie. But
yeah,
if you think about that, I think that's probably one of the fairest ways to do it, right? And I think it would push, you know, right now, you know, if you get the top 10 in the nation, right, you get a silver card, right? So you get investments for free. But you don't, if you're third in the nation, you get nothing else. You don't get any money.
I've been there. I've been sitting in my car.
And you know, back in the ice-ray days, I was fortunate enough to get in the top 10, you know, quite a few times. And they made a big deal of every single spot in the top 10. Every single spot paid money. Every single guy, they invited the national banquet. You know, they did things in the magazine. Now, I mean, it was a different time, different deal. But they made kind of a big deal of it. And, you know, NHRA, you know, they think they do, what is it, top 50 or top 40 they do every year in the one national dragster. They put the list in there, right?
Yeah, I think it's top 50.
But other than that, like, it's not a big deal getting the top 50. But, like, you know, getting in the top 50 is not the easiest thing in the world to do. I mean, there's, you know, usually over 1,000 people that go to races, and you know, obviously not all of them are chasing points. But I think if they institute something like Tripp had suggested, that would make something like getting in the top 50 like more important, have some strategies to it, and you know, I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree to that. I mean, but the problem is, you know, a lot of these races, because of rig size, TV time, you know, everything else, I mean, you're only going to allow so many spots in these venues and events.
Right.
So you run into that issue too, okay, let's say, or maybe you do the top 25 or whatever. I don't know. I think it goes, you know, I think something that will cure this more than anything is something we brought up at PRI, you know, NHRA, myself, and another group of guys. We'll talk about that in a little while. But the other problem we've got right now is this holding spots for people. So it's been going on probably 3 or 4 years. Some couple guys have figured this out. It's awful funny when you look at like the 50th Gator National list when it filled up to who actually went to the event. It's probably about 50% of what it actually looked like. Same as will be this year, I'm guessing. So there's this issue of, you know, how do you deter this? You know, you got a guy with 7 grading points who maybe doesn't have a guy that's got 8 or 9 that can hold a spot for him until they can figure something out. But you got a guy with 4 grading points that knows somebody who maybe is a past world champion or a top 10 finisher that's, you know, from Division 6 or Division 7 or wherever, that's not going to go. So this guy enters, you know, holds it till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning when it's at the minimum number, and they do the old, you know, you hit the withdraw, I hit the enter, and boom, this guy's in there. So that's, in my opinion, that's a bigger issue than the grading point thing, because if you could eliminate that, you know, a lot of these people that couldn't get in, they're going to get in. So, you know, do you go with some kind of a waiting list? I mean, one of the ideas that was kind of batted around, from what I understand, but nobody really wants to do anything about it, was to have like a waiting deal. So, like, example, stock filled up at a grade 8, right? 50 cars or 60 cars,
yep,
whatever the number
is.
So, all of a sudden, when that fills up, it kicks over to this, you know, 10-spot alternate board, basically an alternate entry board. So when it opens up to a grade 7, anybody with a grade 7 can enter as an alternate until the 10 spots are full. So then when someone withdraws from the main thing, it pulls someone from this board with the correct amount of grading points, then, you know, having it to where, you know, 4 weeks down the road, Joe Blow, that's got 3 grading points, can do the old swap-a-roo. And get in, you know, because you're going to see a lot of that. I mean, if you really go back and look at the 50th Gator Nationals, because that's probably where it was probably the most used that I've seen, there was a lot of guys with 3, 4, and 5 grading points that got to race at the Gators, and it filled up at a grade 7. With a lot of guys with a grade 6 that wanted to go that were on the outside looking in. So, you know, NHRA's got to do something about that, I think, to kind of, you know, even this out, because I know I would be, if I had a grade, you know, 6, and I'm wanting to go to Florida, and all of a sudden I see 2 or 3 guys with grade 4s and grade 5s getting in because somebody's holding a spot, I'm going to get pissed, you know.
Yeah,
for sure. And rightfully so. Rightfully so, because you took the time, or whoever the racer is, took the time, traveled to get those grading points so you could get into those races. And then because the guys are manipulating the system, you know, manipulating, abusing, whatever you want to call it, this is going on. So, you know, and everybody said, well, what would you do if they didn't get in? Well, I mean, it's real simple. You just enter the race like you would normally. You know, you pay your $320. And if you don't, if the spot doesn't open up, then instead of having a 1-year time limit on that $320 credit, like if you enter a race and withdraw, you have
right.
1 year to use that deal. On an alternate deal where you didn't get to race, just make it so there's no limit on that credit. You know, or,
yeah.
or put a five-year limit on that credit, you know, so that the guy has got a chance to use it. And, I mean, really, if you can't use it in 3 to 5 years, I mean, that's kind of your own fault, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of the – I agree with what you're saying. I think some of the problems are
You know, oftentimes a lot of guys have to schedule their vacation, you know, sometimes even many months out, right?
Correct.
So, okay, I don't get in. I get on this alternate list. I don't know if I'm going to go. I do, you know. And then a lot of guys, I think what they say is, yeah, okay, I got 7 grade points. I'd love to go to the Gator Nationals. I didn't get in right away. So, you know what? I'm gonna say, you know, I'm not going to the Gators this year. I'm going to go to Atlanta instead. And they schedule their vacation for that, knowing they can get in or thinking they can get in. And they kind of make that change, right? And I think, you know, there's always at the last minute, there's guys that jump in. The Monday of, these races always change, right?
Right.
Because there's maybe some local guys that can get off work, or a guy that, you know, maybe was planning to go, just kind of waiting. So I think timing would be the tough thing on that. And, you know, okay, you're on the alternate list for months, and then, you know, somebody finally backs out Monday, a half hour before the deadline. So do they go to the first guy, they call them up and say, hey, you in or not? Or, you know, are you automatically in? And I think it would just be more confusing potentially. So, yeah, but I think something needs to be done potentially. So, and I'm very open to ideas on that for sure. I think the other thing that came up on Facebook quite a bit, and this has been going on for a long time, is the paid spots, guys kind of offering money for these holding up spots. What do you think about that, Charlie?
Well, I mean, I don't blame anybody for doing it. I mean, you know, it's no different than, you know, guys trying to manipulate rules and cylinder heads and intakes and carburetors. I mean, there's a rule there, and you can get around the rule and make yourself some money if you've got a world championship or a top 10 finish or you got 8 grading points. I mean, right now you're not doing anything against the rules. There's nothing in the thing that says you can't hold a grade point. You know, if somebody wants to pay you $500 to run the Gator Nationals and they got a grade 5 and you're going to swap with them, I'm not going to blame a guy for that. You know, I mean, on both sides, I don't blame anybody on either side of the coin. You know, I mean, when you look at it, it's way cheaper to find somebody. Let's just use David Rampey, for example, right now, right? He's retired from drag racing. You know, if I had 3 grading points and a bunch of cash and couldn't go somewhere, I'd call Dave Rampey and I'd say, Dave, I'm going to give you my credit card, enter these 4 races, and then when I tell you, we'll get on the phone and withdraw, and I'll give you, you know, $500 every time you do it. But you can't go get 7 grading points for that. I mean, by the time you go and travel, you're going to have $5,000-$6,000 going to getting all these grading points. You're better off to find somebody like that that'll do it for you, and if everybody makes a little money on the side, you know, what the hell? That's the way the rule's written.
Yeah, no, I agree. So in your expert opinion, since, you know, you may or may not have done this before, what do you think the going rate is for a drop?
It depends on the race. I would say a prestigious race like, you know, the 50th Gator Nationals, I know guys were paying $500 a spot. You know, I know guys were paying money to get into Englishtown, Virginia, Maple Grove, anywhere from $200 to $400 to get in. You know, it just depends. I know that Pomona, there were some guys paying money to save some spot when it was the Winter Nationals and then the finals. Guys couldn't get in that had 4 grading points. So some guys that, you know, jumped in and held some spots. There's a couple of guys that just do it to help out their buddies. You know, I know last fall there was a guy that, you know, guy was talking to him on the phone. He said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to go to the Winter Nationals because I only got 4 grading points and there's only 6 spots left. And this guy said, well, hell, I'll go ahead and enter. And, you know, when it gets to grade 4, you know, call me and, you know, we'll do it at 2 o'clock in the morning and you can go race. And it worked out and, you know, it was just 2 buddies helping each other. You know, one was a guy on the East Coast that wasn't even going there, but he helped, you know, a guy from California able to race at the finals. So, yeah, I would say it's anywhere from 250 to 500. I mean, you know, and it's not happening at every race. You know, I don't see anybody holding spots at Phoenix. I don't see anybody holding spots at Denver, or Topeka, or Chicago, or Norwalk. You know, it's places, you know, Englishtown was real bad. You know, Gainesville, Pomona, the second Vegas race. You know, basically there was only about 5 or 6 tracks where this is an issue because of, you know, the entry slot. You know, to only have 60 or 70 cars at the fall Vegas race, it's absolutely ludicrous. You know, I mean, that place has got so much parking. it's a four-day event anyways. I mean, you could let in 120 cars in each category there. And NHRA would make a lot of money. But, you know, they'd have to work another half a day. I don't know if that's in the budget. So.
Yeah. All right, well, that's, I think we beat that dead horse enough. But, you know, it'd be interesting to kind of watch as the list changes as we approach closer to the Gator Nationals. The weather may or may not have a lot to do with it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, if it gets down to 5 days, I've seen it where, you know, if it looks like it's going to rain every day, I mean, people bail out of that thing like the Ark. I mean, I've seen it where Gainesville was full, you know, when they used to take 80 cars, and, you know, by the time Monday rolled around, there's only 55 on the list, you know. So.
Yeah, well, and the weather where you're from matters too. I mean, we were planning on going 1 year, and we had like a foot and a half of snow in the ground, and we just decided that was going to be way too much work to even get the trailer down the driveway. So,
that's BS. Brad and I left one time, 2 foot of snow, almost got stuck in his driveway. Total BS, Aaron.
Yeah. Same, we wimped out. Not saying it was warranted. Wimped out.
I'm not saying it was my best decision in life, but. I was sure glad to get to the Florida line the next day.
I don't know how well the old toter home would do in snow, but I guess we could try it.
I know my dad was not real impressed because I think that was the maiden voyage on the T&E when it was brand new. And he was just like, man, the second it gets fucking 40 degrees, you assholes stop at your truck wash and wash that trailer.
Yeah. Hey, that year I was there. I was in
Orlando. That's right. Because we washed. That's right. We couldn't find it. We washed it in the at the track in the rain.
Yep. Yeah, then we went to the seafood place at Orlando.
Yep.
Or where's that at? Down over on the coast.
Dixie Crossroads, man.
Dixie
That's
Crossroads,
a great place
see?
To yep. Yeah, that was that the year it rained and we didn't get to race till Sunday once again?
Correct, yep.
Yep. What's next on our list here?
All right, so next on the list is the SRAC committee.
So last week
Yeah, why don't you talk a little about the change of that they announced last Friday that kind of brings you into this thing.
Yeah, so last week out of left field, you know, nobody knew anything about this in the Stock Superstock Committee. NHRA made some changes to the automatic horsepower system, automatic, is it AHFS? Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's correct.
So now, according to the new rules, if your car has ever been hit with horsepower, you know, it is no longer eligible for any kind of reduction, no matter if it happened 20 years ago or 2 days ago. It will never be, you know, you take the example like what happened in Charlotte with the 396, 375 horse Ironhead and the LT1, where you had this killer air and this, you know, heads up and, you know, this outside the bell curve atmosphere and in race conditions where two guys went 120 under and got horsepower. Well, now that for the rest of that existence on, you know, Stock Superstar, Stock Eliminator, it would never be eligible for any kind of a horsepower reduction. So the way it used to be is if you got horsepower, whether it was automatic or a review, you had to wait 3 years before the combination was eligible for any kind of reduction, which most racers, the members of the committee, everybody thought that was pretty fair. You know, you take the LT1, yeah, it happened, it was outside the bell curve. Those guys have to pay for their mistakes for 3 years. You know, and then, you know, either the cars are that slow or this or that. It seemed like it was pretty fair. You know, so this helped. You know, guys like, you know, I'll throw myself and Paul Wong under the bus again. You know, from Paul going out with the U-Stick Belvedere, you know, running 125 under at the Vegas National Event 1 year, winning class, and then coming right around the following year at the Spring Vegas race and running the same car, you know, 45 under and lobbying for, you know, 1% decrease. So that was why the three-year rule was kind of into effect. And I think everybody agreed with it. We knew there was a loophole NHRA did a good job of trying to fix it. So out of nowhere, last Friday, about 2 o'clock, Pastor Ben Gross sent a letter to the 7 members of the board that says, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen. These changes are going to be made, you know, at, you know, 3 o'clock, you know, California time or whatever time it was. So the board was like, a couple of them I know, I can't remember who all was in communication with each other, but there was a few of them, and they'd called back and forth before they sent an email, and they had said, you know, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. You know, it wasn't really an issue. The committee never even talked about it. It wasn't, you know, they talked about some other issues, and this kind of wasn't even on the radar. So they emailed Pat back, and he got back with them probably 20 minutes later, and it said that, you know, this was just to inform you guys, this email was sent to you. It's not up for debate. So, you know, I think that's a big slap in the face to all those guys on that committee and to all of us that elected those guys, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, those guys take time out of their month, you know, to get on these conversations with some of the NHRA higher-ups, discuss stuff that's better for the class. To not involve those guys, whether you're going to make the decision or not, to not even involve them or anybody else. And from what we can figure out, the only reason this rule is in effect is basically to make Pat Cervignos' job 10 times easier, because he's horrible at it anyways. So this just makes it way easier. So now he can go through the thing and say, ah, this got it, this got it. So now, instead of having to go back through and look at, you know, 20 letters or 30 letters he's got, he's only got to look at 4 or 5 things for a horsepower reduction. So that kind of happened last week. I talked to a couple of guys over the weekend, and everybody's pretty, not upset, but they're just disappointed. You know, at the lack of, you know, NHRA says they're for the sportsman racer. You know, they can get up at PRI and say, you know, hey, we're here, you know, sportsmen, they're the backbone of the racing community. They're the backbone of NHRA, and, you know, all these top brass and board members, you know. And at the end of the day, they come back and they do something like this. It's like, well, you know, you didn't even consult these guys? Nothing? You know, and then when they ask questions, not even, you know, saying, hey, we don't like the rule or this or that, you know, it's just a one-sentence response back that, you know, this is not up for debate, you know, like, I'm a dictator and this is how it's going to be. So that's kind of all I know about it.
Let's talk about this a few different ways, I guess. But I guess, do you think there's any validity to the rule then? I mean, it really doesn't make that much sense to me, because
all it does is makes Pat's job easier. That's the 4 people on the committee I talked to, other racers, guys have been around. The only reason for this rule is to take someone who's already lightened up. Now, remember, this person already lightened their load 2 years ago when they came out and said, well, we're not going to do horsepower reductions twice a year. We're only going to do it once. But, yeah, we're still going to give horsepower twice a year. We're just only going to take it away once. So they cut that in half, which was a staple, you know, ever since it started. You know, there's 2 review periods for reduction, 2 to get horsepower. Really simple.
Right.
You know, Pat was crying about his job then. You know, it's too much this and too much that. Well, and part of that was his own fault, because the old way, you had to write a letter and give a paragraph of why you thought your combination, you know, deserved a horsepower reduction. Well, now it's streamlined. You punch in your membership number. You punch in your car number. You punch in the combination, whether it's an automatic trans or a manual trans, and that's it. There's no explanation. It's just like, I want horsepower off my combo. I'm going to fill this out. And that's why there was like, what was it, 47 stocker requests that were denied? Because
right,
why wouldn't you? Because the process has been so streamlined and easy, because once again, you know, Pat did that for whatever reason, because it was easier for him, which actually made more work for him because he didn't realize it. You know, I don't feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's screwed up about everything he's touched over there, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, I mean, my one thing is, like, things change over time.
forever is a long time. You know, new cars come out, cars change classes, et cetera. I just don't really see a reason to make this change. And I can just think of a few examples where, you know, 10 years ago, you know, horsepower looked a certain way and it was okay. But, you know, when some of these new cars would come out and change some things, you know, and we use the LT1 cars a lot as an example. But right now, I mean, there's not an LT1 car in the country really that's competitive in B or C stock automatic. There's only a few that even are good enough to qualify at Indy. And that's probably one of the most common cars out there. There's hundreds of those cars out there. And that's a shame that can never be looked at or changed no matter what happens in the future. So thanks for the rant, Charlie. I have to agree with you on this one. A little hard for me to play devil's advocate on this one, but good. Yeah, good rant this week. And just to close up the show here, earlier you had talked about the John Gullis message that he had left on his answer machine. I do have a copy of that, a little sound clip. So I will add that at the end of the podcast for all of the viewers to kind of listen. It's pretty interesting. I'm not sure exactly if that's still in effect, but definitely was for a while. And I do have a clip of the message that someone sent in. So we will add that. And just thanks for listening. And look forward to a really fun year. We are going to get some really great guests on here. We have some really cool stuff lined up, and definitely, you know, tune in. Make sure to follow the Facebook page and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, so that you know when the latest podcast is available. Thanks.
Hi, this is John Gullis, the former John Gullis Racing Engines. As a result of the new ruling made by NHRA, I am no longer in business. If you have any further questions, please contact NHRA.
And that concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.